Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the tyranny of experts right after this. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, our public institutions, and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, in our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments. Let's go back to the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties, and the 33 benefits that we receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what the penalty to the law is in order to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic. And it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page. And on that archives page, you can download that free General Law CD package right there. Stream it or download it. Hey, we're talking about the tyranny of experts, so let me give you the name and number of the article here again, and then I'm going to diverge just a little bit and take a look at Leviticus chapter 11, because the Messiah had a problem with the experts also. He was in trouble with the litany of the experts from the day he started his ministry until the day they killed him. And it was the experts that actually killed him. But the story that we want to get you started on is Morris E. Chaffetz. And it's spelled C-H-A-F-E-T-Z. He's an MD, medical doctor. Now, he wrote a book, and the title to the book is called The Tyranny of Experts, Blowing the Whistle on the Cult of Expertise. And it was published by Madison Books back in 1996. Madison, M-A-D-I-S-O-N Books, in New York, 1996. And there's a telephone number here. It's available through the National Book Network, or at least it used to be. Now, you see, this is 14 years old. And this article here was written July 1998, so that's 12 years ago. It appeared in Volume 3, Issue 2 of the Psych News International. And it may be out of print, it may be a little tough to find, but it's well worth the effort in my view. The telephone number here for this National Book Network is 1-800-462-6420. Once more, that's 1-800-462-6420. Now, the price of the book at that time was $19.95. And the ISBN number on here, in case you go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or somebody, if you give them this number, they put this into the computer and they say, oh yeah, we got a copy of that, and it's located in New Delhi, India or someplace. That number, ISBN 1-56833-064-2. Now once more, that's ISBN number 1-56833-064-2. I'll give you that number and that address one more time in this program. And if you missed it here in the series, there's seven programs in the series. I've mentioned that four or five times so that you can look back in one of these broadcasts and you can pick up that name and address and that book title again. Let me show you what happened to Jesus over here. He was talking one time to a Pharisee. It's in Luke chapter 11, starts in verse 37, dealing with preachers. And there's three professions here that Jesus didn't have any he didn't have any interest in, he didn't have any compassion for. And the first one was preachers. Preachers. So if you're a preacher, you gotta wake up and smell a coffee here. Second was lawyers. Third one was bankers. These are three professions that are criminal. All of the professions are criminal. They all require licenses, and licenses, by definition, are criminal. They're a criminal activity. You got a driver's license in your pocket, it's a prima facie evidence of criminality. You got a marriage license, you're a criminal. You got a business license, you're a criminal. A license is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. The enterprise that you're engaged in with your driver's license, marriage license, and business license is an enterprise that is illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. It violates the law of God. And that's why you have this professional license. You need the license to give you permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. So the state comes along and legalizes what God has already declared to be illegal. That's why sodomites want a marriage license so that they can get married. Otherwise, it would be illegal. Marriage, you see, of and by itself isn't illegal. You don't need a marriage license to get married. You all got one. Why? Because you wanted to break the law. What law did you want to violate? I would venture to say, when I ask that of students, I ask them, I say, did you get a marriage license? And they'll raise their hands. Oh, yeah, yeah. I did, too, when I first got married. First wife, I got a marriage license. Why did I get a marriage license? I didn't know. Everybody else does. They tell you got to get a marriage license. I had a driver's license, so why shouldn't I get a marriage license? Remember, the experts told you that you needed a license. Well, why would you need a license to do something that's legal? Look it up for yourself. It's in Bouvier's Law Dictionary, definition of a license. Permission to do something that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. So you got the license to get married because you wanted to break a law. The law that you wanted to break was the bar, the crime of interracial marriage. It's against the law to marry outside your race. That's the only purpose for a marriage license. Marriage isn't illegal other than that. So now you needed this license to do something that God has already prohibited. Now, did you marry somebody outside your race? Well, probably not. Only 1% of people actually break that law. But you were licensed to break that law. You were prepared. You intended to. You just didn't get the job done. Now, in Luke chapter 11, Jesus, the Messiah, not that his name is Jesus, you know, for those of you out there that take exception to that, but for the benefit of the millions of people out there that don't know Yahweh or Buddha or Allah or somebody else, you know, here in the United States and in general in the Western world, Western Hemisphere, we respond to this name Jesus. Jesus is actually the name of the Greek sun god Zeus. I find it hard to believe that Jesus unnamed himself Zeus after the Greek sun god, but, you know, we named him that. We thought that was a good title for him. So anyway, in talking about the Messiah here in Luke 11:37, as he spoke, a certain Pharisee besought him to dine with him, and he went in and he sat down to meat. A Pharisee, now that would be a Roman Catholic priest, you know, in today's parlance. It would be your pastor in your local church. It would be the bishop, you know, of you Mormons out there, the bishop. He invited him in to sit down to meat. They're going to sit down to dinner. Now, when the Pharisee saw it, he marveled that he had not first washed before dinner. Now, that tells us something. Jesus comes in. I was like me, you know, when I was a little kid, and my Aunt Bessie would say, did you wash your hands before you sat down to the table? Well, of course, five-year-old kids have always washed their hands clear up to their elbows and their neck and their ears, too, right? And then my Aunt Bessie or my granny or somebody grabbed me by the ear. Grab you by the ear, not often, but once in a while. And march you off to the bathroom, and then they would proceed to scrub you before dinner like you're so full of germs over here that you're going to infect everybody at the dinner table, you know? Well, Jesus didn't wash before dinner. And so the Pharisee, he marveled, and he looked at him, and he asked him about that in the eternal. This is the Messiah now. Said to him, now, do you Pharisees make clean the outside of the cup and the platter, but your inward part is full of ravening and wickedness? You fools, did not he that made that which is without make that which is within also? But rather give alms of such things as you have, and behold, all things are clean unto you. He said, woe unto you Pharisees, because you tithe mint and rue and all manner of herbs, and you pass over judgment and the love of God. These ought you to have done, and not to have left the other undone. Woe unto you Pharisees, for you love the uppermost seats in the synagogues, and greetings in the markets. Woe unto you scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, because you're as graves which appear not, and men walk over them and are not aware of them. And he called this guy everything but a white man, didn't he? A little later on, his disciples said, hey, don't you know that you're offending these guys? Jesus was offensive to the Roman Catholic priest, the Mormon bishop, and the pastor of the local Baptist church. Yes, sir, he was offensive to him. And he told this guy, he said, you know, you're a hypocrite. And these, remember, are the paid professionals. Now, why don't you try that next Sunday morning? You know, tell your preacher, you know, he's a lying hypocrite. He is. You'll be telling the truth. But it'll get you excommunicated, and it'll get you the ire of all of your fellow parishioners. I mean, all the other people look upon this paid professional as being, you know, next to God. So you probably won't want to do that, at least not in the open, but, you know, you could kind of feign it, you know. Now, there's another story in here about the lawyers. In verse 45, then answered one of the lawyers and said to him, Master, thus saying, thou reproachest us also. He said, now that you've tuned these guys up, do you want to reproach us, the lawyers, too? You know, those of the paid profession. And he said, woe unto you also, you lawyer, because you laid men with burdens that are grievous to be borne. And you yourselves touch not the burdens with one of your fingers. Woe unto you, because you build the sepulchres of the prophets, and your fathers killed them. Truly you bear witness that you allow the deeds of your fathers, for they indeed killed them, and you built their sepulchres. Therefore also said the wisdom of God, I will send them prophets and apostles, and some of them they shall slay and persecute, that the blood of all of the prophets which was shed from the foundation of the world may be required of this generation. In verse 51 he said, from the blood of Abel unto the blood of Zacharias, which perished between the altar and the temple. Truly I say unto you, it shall be required of this generation. Woe unto you lawyers, because you have taken away the key of knowledge. You entered not in yourselves, and them that were entering in you hindered. And as he said these things unto them, the scribes and the Pharisees began to urge him vehemently, and to provoke him to speak of many things, laying wait for him, and seeking to catch something out of his mouth, that they might accuse him. They were like undercover IRS agents questioning somebody, tape recording it so that they can get the information out of this guy's own mouth so that they can prosecute him. That's why I tell you people, you know, the best thing you can do is shut up. Keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything. You're not going to help your case any talking to an IRS agent or a policeman. His job is to get something out of your mouth with which to convict you. Wake up. Smell the coffee here. Nothing personal. He's just doing his job. That's his job. Put people in jail. Fill up the beds. Eliminate the vacancy factor. So Jesus didn't have good words for lawyers and preachers. Now remember, these paid professionals, I won't get into the bankers, he made a whip and he drove them out of the temple and they got ticked off at him and finally killed him. But the moral to the story is these professionals over here is the people he was having the problem with. He wasn't having a problem with plumbers, carpenters, electricians, and blacksmiths, farmers. Hell, they listened to him and they said, hey, this guy sounds like he's on the up and up. The people that he was having a problem with were the people that were the paid professionals. These are the guys, you know, that went to college. These are the guys that had papers on the walls that told everybody how smart they were. And he told them, he said, you know, you're fools, you're hypocrites, blind, leading the blind. Now let me give you an illustration about these preachers over here. One of the things that preachers are really down on, it's alcohol, it's drinking. They're down on Skid Row with their soup kitchens, and they've got church down there. And when these Skid Row bums come in, you know, they give them a meal and they preach to them. And they think, and they're probably sincere, and they believe that they're doing good and that they're going to go to heaven and one thing and another. Well, listen to this. Jesus made this observation in Matthew 7:21. He says, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say unto me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, and in your name have cast out devils, and in your name done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you that work iniquity. Now remember here in Luke 11, he said, you pass over the love of God. If you look up the word love, you'll code bleed it out, and you'll find that love of God means keeping the Ten Commandments of God. That's the code word. The Bible is written in code. Jesus was telling these people that they needed to practice the law of God, and he castigated the preachers because they wouldn't teach that. And they don't today. Your preachers today, whether he's a Mormon, a Catholic, a Protestant, or a Jew, will tell you plainly that the law of God is abolished, nailed to the cross with Jesus, and taken out of the way, and that you don't need to practice that. So let me introduce you to Jesus, you know, the real Messiah, and here's what he had to say about it. And I can tell you with certitude here that these preachers over here know better. Your preacher, when he tells you that the law of God is abolished and nailed to the cross with Jesus, is a damn liar, to cite Mark Twain. He's not making that assertion accidentally. He knows better. He knows, or he should have known. Now here's what the Messiah said. In Matthew 5:17, he said, think not. That means don't think. That means put it out of your mind, dummy. Can you see that? Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For truly I say unto you, until heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least, notice the word least commandments, and shall teach men so, he shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Now, would you rather be called least or great? Now, these pulpit parrots that come to you on Sunday morning and tell you that the law of God has been abolished and nailed to the cross with Jesus are damn liars. They know better. And they are hindering those of you who might enter into the kingdom. You know, not many of you are going to do it anyway, but, you know, there might be two or three of you out there that might say, well, maybe this isn't such a bad program after all. Maybe I ought to obey God and keep his commandments. In Matthew 19, Jesus was talking to one of these lawyers. And this lawyer, in Matthew 19, verse 16, said, and behold, one came and said to him, well, good master, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? Or paraphrased, you know, what do I have to do to go to heaven? And so Jesus said, well, why do you call me good? There is none good but one, and that's God. But if you will enter into life, keep the commandments. This is Jesus now. If you've got a red letter Bible, it's in red letters. Personal quotation from the boss himself. He said, if you will enter into life, you want to go to heaven, partner, keep the commandments. Now this Pharisee, he says which? Okay, which commandments? Is it the commandment that says I have to wear tassels on my garments? Or is it the commandment that says don't wear mingled fabric? Or is it the commandment that says use just weights and balances? And so Jesus comes back and he said to him, which? And Jesus said, you shall do no murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness and honor your father and mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Young fellow said, hell, I've been doing all that since I was a kid. What do I lack yet? And he said, okay, well, here's what you lack. Sell everything that you've got and come follow me. And the guy said, well, no, I can't do that because I've got my Ferrari and I've got my business to think about. So anyway, here's the moral to the story. Jesus was not opposed to the Ten Commandments. He expounded them and he said, you got to practice these. If you will enter into life, boys and girls, you want salvation? You want to go to heaven? You want to get your reward, whatever you think it might be? Keep the commandments. And he cited five of the Ten Commandments right there. Now, write this down. It's in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5. That's just in case you wanted to get all 10 of the Ten Commandments. You wanted to get the whole law in context. There it is. Ten Commandments. Write this down. It's Exodus 19, verse 16, through Exodus 24, verse 8. There's the Old Covenant contract. There's your deal. That's what your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy, 84 generations back, signed up for and agreed to. And because he signed up and agreed to that, he received certain benefits. And those benefits that he received when he died passed on to his firstborn son and to the heirs and assigns forever until it reaches you today. You. That's why you're a part and parcel with this contract. Not because you agreed to it, but because your great-great-great-granddaddy, 84 generations back, agreed to it. And the benefits that flow from it inure to the heirs and the sons forever. And forever isn't up yet. I don't know when forever is going to be up. But I do know that it ain't up yet. So Jesus didn't have any bad words about the Ten Commandments, and he didn't abolish the Ten Commandments. And he told you to practice them, and he said, furthermore, if you teach men to violate the least commandments, that's like Leviticus 19:19, don't sow your field with mingled seed, and you go out and teach somebody else that, I'll call you least. I'll make you the damn dog catcher of Theodosia, Missouri. That'll be your reward. But if you do that law, if you don't mingle your seed, if you don't sow your field with mingled seed, and if you teach other people, don't do that, I'll make you great in the kingdom. Now, I don't know how great is. You're not going to become the right-hand man of Jesus. There was a woman, the mother of two of the disciples, and she came up to the Messiah one day and she said, I want you to make my boy George and my boy Bob your right and left-hand man. I want you to put this one on your right hand, this one on your left. And the Messiah said, lady, you don't know what you're asking for here. I mean, you got your head up your posterior region. The decision as to who's going to be right-hand and left-hand, who's going to be the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of State in the kingdom of God will be decided by the Father, not by me. I'm going to be the king, all right, but I'm not going to decide who the Secretary of State and the Secretary of War is going to be. That's going to be decided for me also. And so, you know, for little Georgie Gordon to come along and say, well, I want to be on Jesus' right hand, that ain't going to happen. And it ain't going to happen with you or anybody else. It's going to be somebody like Moses or Abraham or, you know, maybe Abel or, you know, it'll be somebody that's accomplished something. Daniel might be a candidate. And then for the rest of us, the locals coming in here at the end of the program over here, my guesstimate is that what he's selecting now, just before the second coming, are the judicial offices. Judicial. You might make judge. You might make Judge Judy of the local magistrates court of Brooklyn, New York. That's about where we're working right now. All right, now with this in mind then, the lawyers and the preachers were castigated. I want to read you a story here. It's about alcohol. Remember I told you here at the beginning? Let's flip over here to Deuteronomy 14. There's a little story here. Deuteronomy 14 deals with clean and unclean meats. And the preachers, God love them, you know, they're out here trying to save you and get you to go to heaven, you know, knocking on your doors and one thing and another. Well, anyway, the bottom line to this when we deal with alcohol is the preachers are opposed to alcohol. Just name one that isn't. Can you? I mean, in the Mormon church, they don't even drink alcoholic beverages. They'll tell you that's wicked and evil stuff. Baptists, they don't. Now Catholics, they can imbibe a little. But Baptists and Mormons, they don't. Listen to this. Here's Matthew chapter 14, verse 26. He says, "You shall bestow that money for whatsoever your soul desires." The word lust here is probably not a good translation. "For oxen or for sheep or for wine or for strong drink." Do you know what strong drink is? Wine or strong drink? Strong drink. That's whiskey. That's scotch. That's tequila. You got beer, 3% alcohol. You got wine, 25% alcohol. And then you've got whiskey. That's about, 75%, 70%. And then you've got vodka. Sometimes this vodka goes up to 100 proof. That's 50% alcohol. Proof and alcohol, just for your information, is measured at 200. Not 100, but 200. So if you've got something that says it's 25% alcohol, then that's 50 proof. And if it's 70%, or 70 proof, 70 proof, what would that be? Well, 70 and 70 would be 140. 70, that's not, it isn't 50% alcohol, it's something less. It'd be about 40% alcohol. Jack Daniel's whiskey, 70 proof, around 40% alcohol. Now, if you've got 200 proof, that's 100% alcohol. Now, just a little lesson there. Now, here's God comes along and he says, during the Feast of Tabernacles, which is what this is dealing with here, during these festival periods, and he says, "You shall not eat," in verse 21, "of anything that dies of itself. You shall give it to the stranger that's in your gate. He shall eat it. Or you may sell it to an alien, because you're a holy people unto the eternal. You shall not see the kid in his mother's milk." Don't drink pasteurized milk. "You shall truly tithe all the increase of your seed. And you shall eat," in verse 23, "before the eternal in the place which he shall choose to place his name there. The tithe of your corn, the tithe of your wine, and of your oil, firstlings." This is your second tithe now. "That your herds and of your flocks, that you may learn to fear the eternal your God always. And if the way be too long for you, so that you are not able to carry it, or if the place be too far from you, which the eternal your God chose to set his name there, then the eternal your God shall bless you. And you shall, then shall you turn it into money, bind up the money in your hand, and you shall go into the place which the eternal shall choose, and bestow that money for whatsoever your soul lusts after, for oxen," that's steak and baked potato, "or for sheep," you know, you might want to rack a lamb, "or for wine," Cabernet Sauvignon, strong drink, Jack Daniels, "or for whatsoever your soul desires. And you shall eat there before the eternal your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household." Now, I could point to about 10 more places here in the scripture that talk about drinking. In fact, the Apostle Paul recommended to Timothy that he drink a little wine for his stomach's sake. Science has now shown us that, yes, indeed, red wine has health benefits. Now, you know these preachers out here that are telling you that you take a drink of alcohol and you're going straight to hell. Those people know better. Do you tell me now that Billy Graham never read? You're going to tell me that Jerry Falwell and Jimmy Swaggart and Jim Baker and Oral Roberts have never read Deuteronomy chapter 14. Never saw it. Total mystery. Well, if that's true, then they're incompetent boobs. And they ought not to call themselves ministers or preachers. And if they have read it, and then they come to you and tell you that if you drink, you're going to hell, then they're damn liars, aren't they? And aren't they experts? Aren't they paid professionals? And don't we rely upon them to relate to us the message that God has for us? And isn't that why you go to church every Sunday? Now take that back, you Mormons. Now take that back to your bishop and ask him what the hell's going on over here that he teaches against the scripture. Why don't you? I mean, you know, start thinking for yourself for a change instead of letting the paid professional think for you. Meanwhile, back on the farm, we're at the halfway point. Now let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour. An editorial review. We are editorializing here. And that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order your CD package by calling the law school and asking for it. It's the place to start. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. In the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the paid professionals, the tyranny of experts. I'm going to give you one more name and address here. The guy that wrote this article here, his name is Chaffetz, C-H-A-F-E-T-Z, Morris E. Chaffetz, C-H-A-F-E-T-Z-M-D. And his goal in life is to get you to think for yourself instead of listening to the experts, and that's what I've been suggesting for 25 years. I'm not sure that all these experts are as smart as we give them credit for. But in addition to that, Chaffetz here has written a book. It's called The Tyranny of Experts, Blowing the Whistle on the Cult of Expertise, published by Madison Books back in 1996, Madison Books in New York. I imagine that's New York, New York. The ISBN number is 1-56833-064-2. ISBN 1-56833-064-2. It used to be 1995 when it was new, U.S. dollars, available through National Book Network. Now they had a telephone, see if it's still good. 1-800-462-6420. That's 1-800-462-6420. If you don't find it there, you'll probably find it under that ISBN number in your local used bookstore, maybe even Barnes & Noble. All right, now with that in mind, let me take you back here to Genesis chapter 6, 7, and 8. There's a story in here about Noah's flood. Now, if you've been to college or, you know, even high school, you know that Noah's flood was local. There's been no worldwide flood. The experts told you that. So I just thought I would refer, and if you've been to church and you were to ask your church leaders, is the flood local or worldwide, they'll tell you it's local. The flood was local. All of the experts are in agreement. The flood is local. There was no worldwide flood. The flood was local. You got that? All right. Now, that's what the experts have been telling us. Now, I read Genesis 6, 7, and 8, and I couldn't find any basis for that conclusion. And I wanted to read you a few excerpts out of this. And then ask you, does that sound like that's a local flood to you, or does it sound like that's worldwide? And I'll make a few editorial comments as we go along. First of all, in chapter 7, the Eternal said unto Noah, come you and all of your house into the ark, for you, thee, have I seen righteous before me in this generation. Of every clean beast you shall take to you by sevens, the male and his female, and of every beast that are not clean by two, the male and his female. Of fowls also of the air by sevens, the male and female, to keep seed alive upon the face of all the earth. Yet for 7 days, and I will cause it to rain upon the earth, 40 days and 40 nights, and every living substance that I have made will I destroy from the face of the earth. And Noah did according unto all that the Eternal commanded him. Does that sound local or worldwide to you? Now, if we're talking about a local flood here in Iraq, down the Tigris-Euphrates Valley, there have been many floods go down that valley over the years. It doesn't affect any animals in Siberia or animals in Australia. It doesn't affect any animals over here in North or South America. And here's a pretty direct statement that says, I want you to take the clean animals. And here's Noah. He is being instructed as to clean and unclean animals. No one knew the difference between a dog and a sheep. He knew that one of them he could eat and the other he couldn't. And he said, you take the dog in there by twos, him and his female, and you take the clean animals in by sevens. You take seven females and seven males. So that we can keep seed alive on the face of the earth. Now, you'd think if this was a local flood, you know, down the Tigris-Euphrates, he would have said, so that we can keep seed alive here in Iraq, so that we can keep animals alive here in the valley. Now, that isn't the first and last word on the subject, but, you know, there's the opener. Right? Now, let's take a look at the next section. Noah was 600 years old when the flood of waters was upon the earth. Noah went in, and then his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him into the ark because of the waters of the flood. Of clean beasts and of beasts that are not clean and of fowls and of everything that creeps upon the earth, there went in two and two unto Noah into the ark, the male and the female, as God had commanded Noah. And it came to pass after 7 days that the waters of the flood were upon the earth. That was the second section, chapter 7, Genesis. The waters were upon the face of the earth. Doesn't say it was on the face of the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. It was upon the face of Iraq, upon the face of Assyria or Babylon. It says upon the face of the earth. All right, there's two clear indications that this is worldwide. All right, so I'm still not convinced. Well, let's read on. In verse 11, he says, in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. And the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. Let me ask you this. Have you ever seen it rain for 40 days and 40 nights? I never have. I have seen some long rainstorms, but I've never seen it rain for 40 days and 40 nights. Now, it might rain in some places. But, you know, usually there's a little break in the rain, you know, even in the rainforest. You know, it rains for a while and it quits. Rains for a while and it quits. And this statement here says it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. It says the fountains of the great deep were broken out open. Have you ever seen these caves underground, things like Carlsbad Caverns? Do you ever wonder, well, where in the hell did those caves come from? Well, under the earth and over the earth was a canopy. Under the earth sat on what would be called the water cushion. And then there was a mist that went up from the earth. It didn't rain in those days. A mist went up from the earth. Where did it come up? Came up out of the ground. We had a different meteorology in those days. Things were different. Now, take a look at that and think about that for a minute as you read through chapter 7 and chapter 8 over here, because remember the subject matter is, well, was the flood local or was it worldwide? The preachers are all telling you, well, it was local. The scientists are telling you, well, it was local. That's not the message that we're getting here from the scripture. Verse 13, he says, in the selfsame day entered Noah and Shem, Ham, and Japheth, sons of Noah, Noah's wife, and three wives of his sons with them into the ark. They and every beast after his kind, and all the cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing and creeps upon the earth after his kind, and every fowl after his kind, and every bird after his sort. They went in under the ark, under Noah, into the ark, two by two, of all flesh, wherein is the breath of life. And they that went in male and female of all flesh, as God had commanded him, and the Eternal shut him in. The flood was 40 days upon the earth, and the waters increased, and it bare up the ark, and it was lifted up above the earth. And the waters prevailed and were increased greatly upon the earth. And the ark went upon the face of the waters. And the waters prevailed exceedingly upon the earth. And all the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered. 15 cubits upward did the waters prevail. And the mountains were covered. And verse 21, and all flesh died that moved upon the earth, both of fowl and of cattle and of beast and of every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth, and every man. Notice the word, and every man, and in all whose nostrils was the breath of life, of all that was in the dry land, died. And every living substance was destroyed, which was upon the face of the ground, both man and cattle, and creeping things, and the fowl of the heaven, and they were destroyed from the earth, and Noah only remained alive, and they that were with him in the ark. And the waters prevailed upon the earth 150 days. I want you to notice this term here, the water covered all of the mountains and the high hills. Well, let me ask you this, does water seek its level? And isn't Mount Ararat over there on the border with Iraq? Just using uniformitarianism now. Assuming that the high hills weren't as high as Mount Ararat, but that they covered the high hills 15 cubits deep. 15 cubits, that's a foot and a half. So that's 22 and a half feet deep. Don't you think that water would spill over a little bit, maybe into the Jordan Valley? Hmm? Maybe spill over into Africa a little bit? It rains for 40 days and 40 nights. God says, I'm going to kill everything that draws breath upon the dry land. Everything upon the earth. That's a pretty all-inclusive statement. Now, you can sit there and say, well, I don't believe it. Well, that's fine. And I'm not here to convince you. I didn't come here to tell you. I just came here to tell you that any preacher that would come to you and tell you that that flood was local is a damn liar. Damn liar. He knows better than that. Now, there's a story here in the book of Revelation. I'm going to flip over here to Revelation just to read you this little context. God said, of you preachers out there that want to change the Word of God, you don't think that God meant what He said, so you're going to change it a little bit. He said, I'm going to testify unto every man that hears the words of the prophecy of this book. If any man shall add unto these things, God shall add unto him the plagues that are written in this book. And if any man shall take away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God shall take away his part out of the book of life and out of the holy city and from the things which are written in this book. Now, you evolutionists are probably pretty safe here because God isn't aiming this at you and your evolutionary philosophies. He's aiming this directly at the people that are perverting the author's intent. Perverting the author's intent. In chapter 8, listen to this. And God remembered Noah and every living thing and all the cattle that was with him in the ark, and God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters assuaged. The fountains also of the deep and the windows of the heaven were stopped, and the rain from the heaven was restrained. And the waters returned from off the earth continually. And after the end of 150 days, the waters were abated. Have you ever heard of a flood anywhere on planet Earth that lasted 150 days? Come on, guys. That's 5 months. Now, you just saw a great big flood over in Pakistan, a humongous flood, 1,200 miles long, down the Indus River, down the Indus Valley. And it didn't last 5 months. It didn't kill all the people in the land. You didn't see those people building arks over there to put all the animals in them. The flood comes, the people go up on high ground, the water passes, and then the flood's over. That isn't what's being described here at Genesis 6, 7, and 8. He goes on, he's got a little bit more to say here. He says, the ark rested in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, upon the mountains of Ararat. The waters decreased continually until the 10th month, and in the tenth month, on the first day of the month, were the tops of the mountains seen. Now remember, it was in the second month that the flood began. Now in the 10th month, you can look out the windows of the ark, and you can see that the tops of the mountains. Under the tops of the mountains, there's still floodwaters out there. The ark is beached upon Mount Ararat, and out there looking at the other mountains, you can see the tops of them. That sounds like a local flood, does it, boys? It came to pass at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark which he had made. And he sent forth a raven, which went forth to and fro until the waters were dried up from there. And he sent forth a dove from him to see if the waters were abated from the face of the ground. But the dove found no rest for the sole of her foot. And she returned unto him into the ark, for the waters were on the face of the whole earth. Did you see the face of the whole earth? And you're going to tell me that's local, huh? Now, you may be sitting there saying, I cannot imagine this flooding the entire earth. Well, that's understandable. That's an event. That's called a miracle. That's something that God does. That's something that you and I can't do. We can't bring a flood on the whole earth. I can flood the bathroom. I can flood the basement of my house. I can't flood the whole county. I can't flood the whole state. I can't flood the whole nation. I can't flood the whole earth. My flood capacity is limited. It doesn't strike me as being too obscene to believe that a guy that can create the heavens and the earth could create a flood on one of the little planets that he created. That doesn't strike me as being too disbelievable. Anyway, he goes on, he says here, and also he sent forth the dove, and he stayed yet another 7 days, and again he sent forth the dove out of the ark, and the dove came into him in the evening, and lo, in her mouth was an olive leaf plucked off. He stayed yet another 7 days, and he went forth and sent forth the dove, and she didn't come back again. It came to pass in the 601st year of the first month, of the first day of the month, the waters were dried up from off the earth. Noah removed the covering of the ark. He looked, and behold, the face of the ground was dry. And in the second month, on the 7th and 20th day of the month, was the earth dried. This flood lasted for 1 year and 10 days. That's 375 days. From the day that he got into the boat to the day that he opened up and got out. And you're telling me this flood was local? Huh? Huh? I mean, come on, guys. Let's wake up and smell the coffee. You can sit here and say, well, I don't believe a word of it. That's fine. But don't sit here and lie about what God plainly told you. I mean, you can see what he told you. And then you can sit there and say, well, God's a liar and I don't believe a damn word he said. Well, fine. That's okay. Now, the preachers are out here doing the same thing. They're pious about it, though, see. They come to you and they say, well, you know, we've been out studying these words. And when we look at the meaning and the original intent of these words, this is called higher criticism. This comes from Uncle Esau again. See? Uncle Esau's got his higher critics out there, and they're saying, hey, you don't want to believe what God tells you. You want to believe what the experts tell you. We got these experts out here. Well, okay. Well, when I take a look at the experts and their records so far, and then I take a look at this guy, Mr. Chaffetz, and he says, hey, listen, we've got a cult of experts that are traditionally wrong, liars, and they've got motives. They've got agendas. They've got money to be made. Pharmaceutical companies, they've got a bottom line to consider. The scientists that are promoting this thing of global warming, they're getting paid by the politicians, and they've got an agenda. They want to raise your taxes by $1 trillion. And, you know, just coming out here and telling you, hey, we're gonna bump your taxes up $1 trillion, that isn't popular. You don't win elections doing that. You don't keep peace and stability doing that. So what you do instead, you raise the taxes on the corporations, telling the people that, you know, these corporations making millions and millions and billions and billions of dollars, they have to pay their fair share of taxes like everybody else. And so we believe these experts. Corporations don't pay taxes, never have, don't now, and never will. They're an agency of government that collects the taxes from you, the consumer. So when the costs go up, they go to the PUC, they simply say, we need a rate increase, and they get the rate increase, and the rate increase is passed on to you. And that's the way they raise the taxes on you and me. They do it by stealth. It's the experts that do it to us. But they don't do it to us without our consent. They do it to us with our consent and without our thinking. So let's start thinking for ourselves for a change. It's a wild new concept. Think, think, think. Hey, I'm out of time again. I gotta leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour and the Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.